Hello, and welcome to the Emmy Awards. I'm your host, Emmy Cardinale, and this is my podcast where I talk about what I've been watching or rewatching once a week. Typically, I have been very inconsistent these last few weeks. A lot of podcasts take like breaks around the holidays, and I wasn't going to do that because I didn't really feel like I needed to. I never really take breaks for that kind of thing. This is just a hobby of mine. I don't have like a set schedule that I need to meet for like brands or for monetization or anything. Like, it's genuinely just for fun. So I wasn't intending to take a break, but things got away from me. Like, the holiday season was a lot busier for me than I had originally anticipated. And partially because, like, it wasn't even just the holidays. I'm fostering kittens, and a lot of people wanted to adopt kittens before the holidays. So it was just, like, constant meetings, emails, interviews, all those things to get my kittens adopted. I have one kitten left who somebody is meeting him soon, so he might be adopted by the time this episode goes out. But this episode will also be going out like a little bit later than normal from when I'm recording, because this is episode 99 and episode 98 I haven't recorded yet, because I'm recording that with my sister. But I wanted to record this first because since I fell behind, I was like, if I record this one by myself first, I can start editing it. So when I have 98 recorded, like, I thought this would work better. This is a 2024 year in review, sharing my thoughts on all the shows I watched. And sorry for all the missed episodes, the inconsistencies. I feel like I'll be a lot more consistent this year, hopefully. I do have, after my the next episode I'm recording, but it'll go out before this one. The episode right before this episode is going to be concluding my Bachelor Pad coverage with my sister. She is going to join me to talk about the Bachelor Pad season 2 finale. And then the next episode after this one is going to start my coverage of The Traitors. The Traitors starts on the 9th of January, and I will be covering it week by week. When The Sex Lives of College Girls season 3 wraps up, I will be doing a deep dive on that. Maybe I'll like double up that week if The Traitors is still going on. I think it probably will be. There definitely will be some kind of overlap, so that'll be coming as well. Now, the only other podcast update I have, it's not really an update because I haven't fully decided what I want to do, but Yellow Jacket season 3 comes back in February on Valentine's Day, and I am notoriously a Yellow Jackets fan. Now, the last two seasons that I've covered of Yellow Jackets, I've done like a big deep dive when the whole season is out. Now, part of the reason I started doing that was because I started watching Yellow Jackets. When I started watching Yellow Jackets, the first few episodes of season 2 had already started airing. I did start it kind of late. So by the time I started watching Yellow Jackets, I was like, I don't really want to start recapping week by week here because I already missed a few weeks. Like, you know, and it took me a while to get through, not a while, but like I watched season 1, then I caught up on season 2. Like, it just didn't feel like something that I wanted to cover in the podcast week by week. And so I haven't decided yet what I'm going to do with season 3, because since I've done like 2 deep dives for seasons 1 and 2, I think I want to do a deep dive for season 3 as well. But I don't know if that's like, I haven't decided yet what path I'm going to take. I think also with The Traitors, it might like bleed into Yellow Jackets a little bit, so it might make more sense to do like a deep dive at the end. I just like don't want to find myself rushing through my commentary if I'm doing the deep dive, but I think maybe I will just do the deep dive, but I'll take like, I don't know, the deep dives last time have been like 3 hours plus long. I do think that maybe that's the format I want to go. I'm going to play it by ear. I haven't decided. I think since Yellow Jackets episodes are long enough that I could like do like cover it week by week, I just don't know if I want to, because I really like being consistent and like organized in my mind. I'm like, I've done deep dives before, so that's the format I want to stick to for my Yellow Jacket season 3 coverage, because I will be covering it. But another part of me wants to like recap it week by week and like follow along that way. I haven't decided. I really want to do traders week by week as well. So like it's just kind of hard for me because I'm like, what do I do? Maybe I could double up, but I don't know, because that feels like too much. I think I will just do the deep dive. I haven't fully decided. If anybody has any thoughts, any feedback on what I should do for Yellow Jacket season 3, please let me know, because I will be covering it. I just haven't decided how, like what format. I think the deep dive is probably what I'll do. I'm a little worried that like in my deep dives, I rush through things more than I do when I'm covering it week by week, because I'm like, I need to talk for an hour about this one episode. And I feel like I fill this space more with commentary, where I'm like, if I do a deep dive, will I just be like breezing through the plot points? But I think maybe I will just like figure out a way to organize it for myself. Maybe I don't record the deep dives all in one day so I can really flesh out my thoughts on every episode so it feels like I'm covering it week by week, but then format wise, I don't know. I have to figure it out. I'm really excited. Like, is it stressful that there's a lot to cover? And like, I have a lot of things that I, yes, it is. But anyways, sorry for all the prologue. Since the episode I'm recording with my sister, which will be out before this one, but I'm recording it after, I've already said that like 10 times. Since that one will be just like a recap, and also like I'm doing it with my sister, I don't feel like I would do all this housekeeping intro stuff. So I'm doing it now to kind of get it out. Like, I don't know. Anyways, okay, so this is going to be a year in review, my thoughts on the different shows I watched. Now, if I missed a show that I watched, I'm very sorry. I went through like as much as I could to recall what I watched. I went through like things I covered on the podcast and then reminded myself things I didn't cover on the podcast. So I'm going to try to go in chronological order of everything I watched and share my thoughts on all of the shows. And then maybe, and then at the end, I'm going to do like some kind of superlatives, if you will, since this is the Emmy Awards I'm going to be giving out. Awards, if you will. So the year started off strong. The Percy Jackson show, which started like December of 2023, but it wrapped up in January of 2024. And you know what? I feel kind of bad about the Percy Jackson series because I was like, oh, I'll do like a deep dive at the end. But then I don't know, like time got away from me. I never ended up doing like an episode by episode. You know what I really wanted to do? And I don't know if I said this on the podcast, but I really wanted to reread the book and like follow along while watching the show and kind of compare and contrast, because I have read the book many times, but I thought that would be interesting. But then I just like didn't have the energy to do that because I was like, if I reread the book, I don't know if I want to like do it to like take notes. And the thing is, I literally, fun fact about me, if you don't know, I did my senior thesis in English on Percy Jackson. It wasn't just about Percy Jackson. It was about disability in young adult fiction. And I used Percy Jackson kind of like as a framework. So I reread the Percy Jackson series and like took notes and mapped out how I felt like it touched on disability in order to then compare it to the other books that I was reading that were talking about disability. So I've already done the whole academic thing on Percy Jackson. I'm like, I've read it, I've taken notes. I was like, I don't want to do that for the podcast. But I do eventually want to like visit it. Maybe if there's like some kind of lull at some point, maybe I'll cover it. Maybe before season 2, I don't know. I'll play it by ear. I definitely want to cover it. I had a lot of mixed feelings on the Percy Jackson series. I thought it was like well acted, well produced. Like it was beautiful. It was nostalgic. I really liked it. I think that there were some moments where it kind of like stalled. Like I feel like it kind of, the format was maybe not the best. And like, I don't know. It just kind of, I'd have to revisit it to have more like detailed notes. But I do think that there are some changes that I would make. I think the biggest issue I had, and one of the biggest changes I would make, is I think when you're reading the book, part of what is so compelling about Percy Jackson is his voice, Percy Jackson's. We didn't get enough of Walker's like narration. And I think the show and the things that happen are tonally like so heavy and intense because it's about children and these like very dangerous situations. And obviously when you're reading it, it feels heavy and there's like all of these deep things about people not feeling like Percy feeling like he's a troubled kid. Obviously it's not like all rainbows and butterflies and like perfect unicorn. Like they, rainbows and unicorns. Like, they are in active danger constantly. But I think there's such a levity to Percy Jackson that was somewhat missing from the show, because it was like, we got a little bit of that humor. Like, Walker's hilarious. We had some of the humor, but I would just want more of his perspective. And I think that's something that I think about a lot when I'm reading books from like a first person perspective, is like, how does that translate to a screen? And I do think that was missing a little bit. I thought the visuals were beautiful. I liked the casting. I thought the acting was great. Like, I didn't have many notes on, like, I don't know, some people really hated it. Maybe not. Maybe I just, like, people were really negative about it. But I think also, I love Percy Jackson. It meant so much to me. It still means so much to me. It really, like, reinvigorated probably began a love of reading that I had. Actually, that's not true. I had loved reading a little bit, but it, like, really awakened a passion for reading and prompted me to want to read even more, and to it meant so much to me. And to then have my senior thesis in English be inspired about Percy Jackson just, like, felt very full circle and emotional for me. And I very much went into it being like, this is not going to feel like or be the same experience as reading the books. It's not going to feel the same way as I felt when I read the books for the first time. It's not going to even feel the way that I feel now rereading the books as an adult. It's a different medium. And I don't know. And I think this is something that I really personally always really loved about theater. I was a very big theater kid. And I loved the idea that these characters are not like, and obviously, I mean, I don't know, it's just like you watch a movie and that person who played the role will always be the character in your head in a certain way. In theater, you can watch the same play and five different people can play the main character and do it their own way. And I always loved that idea of like adaptations and like iterations of characters. And honestly, not to get all deep, but I feel like that is very, like, that works very well with like the idea of mythology and like these stories that a different million people can play Aphrodite, a million different people. Like, I don't know. I didn't have any like bulleted notes about the show, so I'm just kind of rambling. But the first episode, like, instantly I had chills. I was very nostalgic. I think that there were some pacing issues later on, but I really enjoyed it and I'm excited to see it continue. I think the actors are doing a phenomenal job. I think that it will hopefully introduce the characters in the world to people who wouldn't have picked up the books otherwise, and it would like, I don't know, I think it's very special. People get to experience Percy Jackson for the first time, even if it's not exactly the way I experienced it. So I don't know, that's just kind of my thoughts. I also, early 2024, was watching Suits. I really liked it. I don't have many thought out, I have yet to finish Suits. It's kind of silly because I will watch like a show about teenage girls in like the Canadian wilderness who have to eat each other to survive, and like that calms me down. But Suits just stressed me out too much. Like, I was like, he's gonna get caught constantly. Like, it was so stressful to me. I do want to continue watching it, and I love like the characters, and it's fun watching Meghan Markle act. I'm enjoying that. Like, I'm excited to eventually pick it back up. It kind of fell to the wayside for me. Also, early 2024, I started rewatching Smash. Well, I started and finished rewatching Smash. I have Apple Music and it tells you like your most listened to song every month. I don't know if Spotify does that. Okay, I'm not saying Spotify doesn't, but like in your replay, it tells you your most played song of the month. And for January, it was a song off of the Smash soundtrack for me because of how much I was like watching Smash. I love Smash. I think it's so easy. Like, if you like musicals and you haven't watched Smash, like, you should. It's like available for free on, I don't remember what app, like maybe Roku. I don't know. You just Google Smash and it's like available for free with ads. It's really, really compelling. I completely forgot huge chunks of the plot. Spoiler. Okay, spoiler. Please do not get mad at me, okay? There is a character in season 2 who dies, and I completely forgot he dies. And him dying is actually, like, really important to the plot. And I completely blocked it out. Like, he gets hit by a car, and I was fully like, okay, he's gonna be in the hospital, but he's fine. He dies. He dies. And the crazy thing is, as soon as I saw him, it all came, like, back to me as if it was, like, a memory I repressed because of how upsetting it was. And it is upsetting. But it's so good. The music, phenomenal. I think it's, like, they made it into a Broadway show, which I'm really interested how that will be. Like, is it just season 1 or is season 2, like, the second act? Because I really like the music from season 2, I think maybe even more. I don't know. I think I like Smash is about these playwrights. I don't know what you call it. Playwrights. Yeah. Who are writing a musical, and it's about Marilyn Monroe. And it's, like, interesting to me. But the second season, it follows, like, the same characters. We get introduced to new characters, but it's kind of like rival musicals. And I find the story for the second musical a bit more compelling. Like, I don't know, like, the Marilyn Monroe thing. Like, I have nothing against her. I'm not, like, a Marilyn Monroe hater. It just feels like an overdone topic. And maybe it wasn't when the musical, when Smash came out, but it just feels very, like, I like the second play better. So I like the music better. Jeremy Jordan's in it, and he, I don't know. It's more compelling to me. I completely blocked out everything of, like, he had some kind of secret past, and then the season ends with him, like, going to jail or something. I don't know. Like, turning himself in and, like, gonna do his time for the crime he committed. I don't even know. Great show. Then early 2024, The Traitor season 2 started. And I have to say, I'm so excited. Like, The Traitor season 3 comes back soon. And I'm so excited because I know more people from the cast. And one thing I was not expecting for The Traitor season 2 to bring me was an appreciation for Pilot Pete. I am a Bachelor Nation girly. His season was a dumpster fire. And as much as Barb is an icon, I was, like, not particularly on the Pilot Pete train. He was a pretty entertaining bachelor, and I did find him, like, charismatic. Like, a lot of the bachelors, like, I watch them and I'm like, I find you actively, like, you're, like, white toast to me. Like, there's nothing there. I'm no attraction, and also I think you're kind of ugly. Pilot Pete, would I date him in real life? No. Is he attractive? Does he have, like, a charisma? Do I think that I could, like, fall for a Pilot Pete-esque person? Yes. I'll be honest. It would have gotten me, like, at some point, I think in Hannah Brown's season, he starts speaking Spanish. That would have gotten me. Like, I would have been, like, living for the fact that Barb is Cuban. Like, I'm not even kidding. Like, I did get the appeal. And, like, the thing is, the Pilot Pete, like, finale where he, like, was with Maddie Pruitt, and then, like, I honestly, maybe it's because hindsight is 2020, and Maddie Pruitt is, like, low-key a parasocial enemy of mine. Not really. I don't care enough about Maddie Pruitt. But, like, the more I've learned about Maddie Pruitt, the more her platform has expanded, the place she is in her life, the more she spews on the internet, the more I am on Barb's side in that. Like, the crazy thing is, Barb hated Maddie Pruitt for reasons that are not the reasons that I hate Maddie Pruitt. But the fact that she hated Maddie Pruitt makes me like her. I can't even, like, the thing is, that season finale, it's a great season of television. Was it a little bit annoying to watch at the time? Maybe. Maybe a little bit. But I also think, like, the thing is, Pilot Pete's season was so peak. Like, I think back to Pilot Pete's season and I'm like, that was, like, and it was also, like, I feel like the end of an era because it aired early 2020, like, right before the pandemic started. And, like, The Bachelor has just been so different since. I think it's on the up and up. Like, Joey's season was definitely really good. And I think the Golden Bachelor franchise really, like breathed a new, brought a new light and then, like, gave the franchise new life. But it was, like, the thing is, at the time, I was like, this is not the best, like, this is not that good of a season. But in, like, hindsight, I'm like, I didn't know how good I had it. It was so good. And then it like really got really shitty for a few years. Like we had Clayton, which at least we got Gabby Windy off of that season. But we had Clayton and then we had Zach. And it was just like flop after flop. Sorry. Like, I don't know. Pilot Pete was like iconic. And we had some like really strong characters coming out of that. Victoria Fuller. Maddie Pruitt, as much as I don't like her. Hannah Ann Sluss. Like, that was the high life. I'm not going to lie. Pilot Pete season. Anyways, I went on that unnecessary tangent. I really was not expecting to, like him as much as I did. But I did. I was rooting for Pilot Pete. I followed him for a few months there until I was reminded that he's a Trump supporter. And then I unfollowed him. But, like, he literally, when Trump was shot, like, posted that photo. That literally, like, I'm sorry. I do not condone violence. I really don't. The way people talked about that as if, like, Trump took a bullet for America was crazy to me. I'm sorry. Like, that's not what happened. Okay. Anyways, sorry, Pilot Pete. Really got a new appreciation for Pilot Pete. It was a great season. I was introduced to, like, a lot of people that I wouldn't have watched their shows. Like, Phaedra. Like, it really made me want to, like, watch a bunch of shows that I'd never had any experience with. It was so good. I know that there was some, I don't know, like, was, like, Dan from Big Brother, like, he was not as shitty of a player as, like, people made him out to be. I think people were unfamiliar with his game, so hearing that he was, like, this legend, like, they thought he would do better than he did. I think that being good at one format of a show, like, doesn't mean you're going to be good at that. And some people are just like, you're good at reality TV, so you're good at TV. But I think when it's a game like that, it's like you can't blame. I don't know. I'm a Dan supporter, okay? I think there were moments where he was cooking. And if they had, like, taken what he was cooking, maybe it would have gone a different way. But they spit it out. That metaphor went nowhere. Anyways, great season. Very excited for season 3. I definitely think season 2 was better than season 1 as a whole. I think the ending for season 1 was a little bit more interesting because of Suri and, like, how betrayed the people felt. But I think season 2 just, they were onto something with the all reality TV contestants. I think the power imbalance of, like, some regular people being on TV for the first time, and then, like, that was just unnecessary. I'm glad they fixed that. Anyways, then in January, I believe as well, maybe it was February, Joey's season of The Bachelor happened. And like I was saying, Joey's season of The Bachelor was phenomenal. I found a bachelor cute for the first time in a while. He's, like, nice, charismatic. It was a fun season. Like, it wasn't too overproduced, or like it didn't feel like they were, like, pushing people for drama in really unnecessary ways. Like, the conflict felt real. The people I was angry at, I felt like I don't know, even the villains, it felt like they were, like, it was genuinely just, like, personalities clashing. It wasn't like anybody being, like, malicious or being distorted. Like, maybe they were distorted a little bit. I'm not saying that the way people come across on TV is 100% how they are. I don't know these people, but, like, I don't know. It was such a good season. The drama was, like, just enough, but, like, the love also overpowered. Obviously, Joey and Kelsey are still together, and I'm, like, I'm so parasocially attached to them. I always say that that I'm really glad that the first reality TV show franchise that I got into was The Bachelor, because I never get, like, attached to showmances or, like, people's relationships from reality TV, even friendships. I'm never going to be like, oh, I miss that when they were friends. Because I learned early on that that shit doesn't necessarily last. So I just, like, don't get invested in people's relationships. I wish them the best. But I'm not like, oh, if they break up, it'll wreck me emotionally. I say that, but if Kelsey and Joey broke up, I do think that it would wreck me a little bit emotionally. But obviously, they deserve to make their own decisions. And if they end up breaking up because they'll be happy apart, then that's none of my business. But I'd be sad. Anyways, great season. Genuinely, if you have not watched a lot of The Bachelor and you want, like, a good season, I recommend that one. It has, like, a happy ending. There's enough drama. It was a great season. The next show I have written down is Vanderpump Rules Season 11. And what's so interesting about Vanderpump Rules Season 11 is that when I was recapping it for this podcast, I had no idea what was to come. You know, I had no idea that the whole cast would be fired and it would be like a, it would come back with the, like, a, you know, the future was very up in the air. And I will say, season 11 of Vanderpump Rules, like, disappointed me almost every single week. And it really pissed me off. And I'm not surprised that, like, they are rebooting it, kind of, and that the old cast is, like, I'm not surprised. And I don't think it had to be that way. Do I think it's probably going to be for the best for the actual people on the show? Yeah. Do I think that it might be the most compelling TV now? I don't think so. I think that there is an era of reality TV that is unfortunately somewhat lost in this current day culture, because when the people, like when Vanderpump Rules started, none of them, maybe some of them, but like the culture wasn't like, oh, you can become a reality TV star and like make a ton of money. People now go on TV specifically because they're like, I can be an influencer. That wasn't like the language back then. Like maybe people could make money. Maybe they thought that it would give them some kind of platform. TV is good. Like, but they were all aspiring like actors and like models and things like that who like worked at Sir. Like, I don't know. It's just like anybody now who is going to be on the show probably isn't just like they probably are trying to be some kind of influencer. And I just think the culture is a little bit different. And I don't know if people will be as authentic, but I don't know. We'll see. I'm not trying to rule anybody out. Will I watch it? Yes. Will I cover it? Probably. They haven't started filming or anything, but season 11 was really disappointing. And it is really sad that that's the way that it like that they went out. And you know what the thing is? It's insane because Vanderpump Rules is a reality television show, but it's so poetic and such a like narrative arc and structure that like the show began with infidelity with Sheena's affair, and then it ended. Like there's somebody on TikTok whose name I do not know, but he's like, he talks about the three pillars of Vanderpump Rules. I don't remember all of them, but I think one of them is like infidelity and the other one's misogyny. I don't remember the third. And it's like, that's so true. And it's just, it's sad that Vanderpump Rules opened with them ostracizing Sheena for being the other woman in a relationship that they had like no role in, really. And then it ended with them somewhat ostracizing Ariana or judging Ariana for not wanting to forgive a man who did the same to her. It's crazy. It's crazy. And it is just really sad. And I felt like it was poorly produced. I also don't understand how if I was on that show and they were constantly like, maybe you should have like if the producers were egging me on it and being like, Ariana should have a conversation with Sandoval, I'd be like, no, like we need to come up with something new. That's not our real lives right now. That's not happening. Like, I don't know. It really, the whole season really pissed me off. And it is kind of depressing that that's the way it ended. But anyways, I also started watching the show 9-1-1. I do not have anything eloquent to say about the show 9-1-1. It is really a fun show because the situations are so outlandish and insane, but the characters feel real and compelling and I enjoy the characters. It's a great show. I do recommend it. Now, if like big catastrophic events like upset you, I don't recommend it, especially if you live in LA. Anyways, I really like 9-1-1. I will be honest, I am not caught up on the most recent season. So I really am so behind. I know vaguely what's happening, but I haven't watched like any of the episodes, but I will get to it. I also watched and covered The Circle season 6, and this was the first season of The Circle that I'd watched in quite some time, and I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. It made me want to kind of watch all of the seasons of The Circle I missed and see how the strategy has changed and evolved throughout time. I really like The Circle. I think it's an interesting format and it feels very, like, I don't know. I think I talk all the time about like reality TV and it evolving, and I think The Circle is a very good example of like a game competitive show kind of evolving with the times and like with social media being so present in our lives and such a part of the daily routine, to make a show where it's like you can either catfish, like, are these people that you're talking to through a screen? are they real? It's so like on the nose for real life that that within itself is so, so compelling to watch. And also it's very interesting the way people like, and the influencers, who's popular and who's not. Like, it's really an interesting show. I like The Circle. I will be watching any other seasons that come out and maybe in some downtime catching up on the other ones. The next big show that I covered like week by week was Pretty Little Liars Summer School. And it's hard because now that it did not get renewed, I'm like looking back and I'm like, oh, so good. My Shayla. But at the time I did have quite a few critiques of it. And I do just generally, my biggest critiques of Pretty Little Liars Summer School. They should not have had the villains two seasons in a row be adults. Maybe, okay, it's somewhat made sense for the first season because it was original sin. The whole point was the sins of their mothers were coming back to haunt them. Okay, it's an adult because he has to be in contemporary age with their mothers or whatever. Couldn't he have, he had like a daughter or something that wanted to avenge like her aunt? I don't know, something. I really, the compelling thing about Pretty Little Liars, in my opinion, was that it wasn't like so black and white. It was like teenagers tormenting teenagers. As evil as Allison De Laurentiis could be, as cruel as Mona or the other members of the A-team were to these girls, at the end of the day, they were flawed teenagers themselves. It wasn't so caricaturishly, you know, simple. And there's just like a level of nuance and complexity you lose when it's like grown adults tormenting teenagers, because it's like there's very little complexity there. It's like anybody who, and maybe there's not supposed to be, but I don't know. I want to, as much as I despise a villain, I want to be able to have some level of like empathy and understanding and being like, they hurt somebody, but it, not that it excuses it, but it's just like, I don't know. I really hated that two seasons in a row, it was adults. I also, like Wes was barely there in season two and then he came up. Like, if I had to rewrite Pretty Little Liars Summer School, I would have made Jen the bad guy. But I would have made Jen Bloody Rose, because Jen is somebody who was kind of sketchy, but we were meant to root for. There was like, it would have had so much more weight if Noah trusted her and like then she betrayed her. It's like Wes, we had no emotional connection to Wes except a negative one. And like all we saw him throughout the season being was like I don't know. They should have made Jen Bloody Rose. I will die on this hill, because Jen, as annoying as she was and as much as everybody hated her, she was written to be like a love interest, somebody we were somewhat rooting for. It would hit so much harder if we emotionally invested in her. We were rooting for her relationship with Noah, and then she was betraying Noah this whole time. That hits a lot harder. When Toby was A in the original Pretty Little Liars, that was insane. Like, that was like, you know, even Mona being A, like, that's crazy. She was friends, like, you know what I mean? Like, it hits a little bit harder. But I am sad that it got canceled, because I feel like the characters were really well done. It was like funny and interesting and like paced well. It was a good show. No show is perfect. I'm sad that it got canceled. I'm really gonna miss it. And I think, unfortunately, a lot of shows just don't get the opportunity to kind of work out their kinks. A lot of shows have kind of like, there are a lot of shows that are like good, but they have like flaws and mistakes, and then they have better seasons than other seasons. Like I feel like it had a lot of potential. It was really well received. Like, it was one of the most popular shows for that streaming platform. It's sad that they canceled it. As many, I criticize things because I care about them, you know? And I really liked it. And the reason that I have critiques is because I would have liked to see it continue and maybe improve. But RIP. Another show I started watching in 2024 was Shameless. I've yet to finish Shameless as well. I really like Shameless so far. I'm on season 8, I believe. So I don't have like that many seasons left. It's a really good show. I mean, there's a reason why it was as popular as it was. I think Ian's my favorite character. I don't know if I have anything intelligent to say about Shameless, except the fact that I don't know. I really relate to Ian and Lip in different ways. Like, Lip's whole arc in college, even though I went through, like, the reason, like, my college experience was difficult for other reasons, it hit close to home in a lot of ways. And that part was hard to watch. Ian struggles with his mental health also. Like, I don't know. It's a very, like, emotional, relatable show, but also very funny. And, like it's a great show. It really is. Anyways, then the next show I have written down was Jen's season of The Bachelorette. And Jen's season of The Bachelorette was, like, a pretty good season. It ended horribly and, like, really tragically. And that's the only thing I can really remember from that season. Because it was just, like, it all felt tainted, you know? Like, Devin was... It's not the first time that, like, the person the lead chooses is, like, unpopular with the group. And, like, there's tension. But for the most part, it ends. And it's, like, they were misunderstood. Or, like, it was sad. It was sad because it was, like, he was just manipulative. Like, I don't know. That was really, like, maybe disturbing is too strong of a word, but it was very, like, disconcerting. Disconcerting? I don't know. I don't know. Unsettling. It was very unsettling, the whole experience, because it's, like, I very much watched The Bachelor through a lens of, like, this is a competition. People go on and they make moves in order to get more time with the lead, in order to get a rose, in order to get screen time, in order to get something out of the show. It's not simply a dating experience because there are cameras there. It's televised, it's produced, it's for entertainment. People don't just go on The Bachelor solely to find love, because if they did, you would go to, like, some single group event. I don't fucking know. So I don't, like, I think the Bachelor is very often, like, black and white, where it's, like, if you mention Instagram and you, like, acknowledge that you're going to get a platform from this, it's, like, you're there for the wrong reasons. And I just think that there's a very normal middle ground where, like, you acknowledge that it's a TV show and that it could be a platform for you. And also that because it's a TV show, you don't want to come across in a bad way and you want to put your best foot forward and, like, all of those things while also genuinely being interested. And I think Devin was very much a very creepy version of somebody who purely thinks of it as, like, a game. And he played the game well. But I think what makes The Bachelor such a compelling game, and what makes, honestly, a lot of social strategy games interesting, is that while it's a game, and The Bachelor specifically more than other games, because the prize is love. In other shows, the prize is money. So it's like, yeah, the relationships matter, but they matter in order to get you the money. The relationships matter in The Bachelor because that is what you were working towards. That's what makes it so interesting to watch, because it's like, it's compelling, in my opinion, because it's so complex in that regard, you know? And it was just really weird to see. Like, people always say, oh, like, this person's here. Like, for Love is Blind season 7, like, when they accused Nick of, like, he said he wanted to be the most famous person. And it's like, okay, you all, maybe not all of you, but, like, a lot, most of you probably acknowledge the fact that you're going to be on Netflix and, like, you're going to be on TV and people will know who you are. Like, wanting to, quote unquote, be famous, in my opinion, doesn't disqualify you. But I think Devin was an example of somebody who, that was the only reason he was there. Everything was a performance. And that is, like, disturbing. Like, you're on the wrong show, buddy, okay? And then, of course, the thing I covered probably for the most time was Big Brother 26. What a great season it was. Definitely a huge improvement from Big Brother 25 in terms of, like, enjoyability to watch. The feed experience was a little bit unfortunate because they got rid of flashbacks and stuff, and it was definitely hard to cover it on the podcast without that kind of stuff. But, you know, we made it through. It was really fun. It was also hard sometimes. Towards the end there, after the people I really wanted to win left, it was a little bit rough. But the ending was very satisfying. Chelsea's a very deserving winner. And it's modern seasons that I can think of. It's like the Big Brother 23, I think, is the last season I can think of before this one that it felt fun to watch. And then also the ending was like satisfying. That was like not even that long ago. But then Big Brother 24, it's like the thing is, the ending was satisfying and also not satisfying, because when they got down to just the cookout, it was like, that's amazing. But I was also upset because Xavier, like, he's great. Nothing against him. Think he was a very deserving winner. But I wanted Hannah, I wanted Chada to win. Or Tiffany. Like, that's who I was rooting for within the cookout. So, like, it was a satisfying ending in that the cookout, like, completed their mission. But it was also upsetting because the people I was rooting for weren't winning. And then season 24 was, like, really depressing to watch, but it had a very satisfying ending. Big Brother 25 was really annoying to watch, and the ending was not satisfying. Big Brother 26 was enjoyable to watch throughout, and the ending was satisfying. Like, it was a great season. I didn't love the AI arena. Like, I think it would have been interesting for a few weeks, but I think it should have expired when the powers expired, because it kind of went on for too long, and because the jury phase started so late, it was just like it lasted way too long. It lasted way too long. And I think similar to the Battle of the Block from season 16, people just learned to work around it. And like, while there were certain aspects that were like interesting, I think it was never like that unpredictable, because it was like, okay, like they worked through all of the scenarios. Like, at the end of the day, you knew who was going to be that one of a few combinations were going to be the people on the block. So you'd be like, okay, if this person is against this person, then I'm voting for the first person. But if they're against the other person, then I'm voting for the other person. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't like that last minute scrambling type thing, because they just worked around the different scenarios. But it was interesting. I really liked most of the cast. And Big Brother 26, I got to interview Quinn for my podcast, which was like a huge deal and like super great. And I'm still so grateful to him. Nicest guy ever. Big Brother 26, genuinely such a, I loved it. I loved being a part of it. Not that I was a part of it, but like as a viewer, I loved being a part of it. What more do I have to say that I have not already talked about for 100 days while the season was airing? The Golden Bachelorette. The Golden Bachelorette kind of fell flat a little bit. I think especially coming off the heels of the Golden Bachelor and then the Golden Bachelor wedding and then divorce. Like, it was a lot of things at once. Or not a lot of things at once, but it was just like, it wasn't as entertaining to me, I have to be honest. I watched it, I enjoyed it, but like, I wasn't as hooked as I was with maybe there's something about like the older women are more compelling than the men. I don't know. Joan was like a fine lead. Like, there was nothing like objectively wrong. I just wasn't as in it. Like, it didn't hook me the same way. But I think they're engaged and still happy, so I wish them the best. Claim to Fame season 3 also happened this year, or 2024, and I liked Claim to Fame season 3, but I do think that it kind of stalled a little bit thing, but it was good. Not my favorite season, but we had some good characters. Love is Blind season 7, the DC season, which I briefly touched on, it was good. A note that I have for Love is Blind, not that they're listening, is I think after a certain point, like, I'm not saying as soon as you're, like, if you get engaged, you have to stick it out to the altar, but I don't think you should be allowed to break it off, like, 2 days before. Like, if you go to your wedding dress fitting, you should go to the altar. It feels kind of a cop-out. And, like, I don't know, it's hard for me because it's, like, from a human perspective, like, being a compassionate person, obviously I think they should have the ability to break up in the privacy of their own homes. I mean, it's still broadcast on TV anyway, so it's like not really in the privacy of their own homes. Like, I get it. Would it, like, as much as I'm like, oh, this is, it would have been better TV, I do, from an emotional human perspective, I'm like, I'm glad Marissa didn't have to like get dumped at the altar, you know what I mean? But I do just genuinely think that they should stick to that format. Like, there should be some kind of rule, because it does feel a little weird. I think also, unfortunately, season 7 for me will always be tainted with the whole Tyler kids thing, because at the end of the day, however you slice it, I made a TikTok about this like months ago when the season was airing, and somebody was like, I don't understand why everybody, like in the comments, somebody said that they don't understand why everybody's like so upset about like an unconventional family dynamic. And it's like, that's not why I'm upset at all. Like, that has nothing to do with it. If he was a known donor, or even if he intended to be a known donor and then he was a friend, so he stepped in and took on more of a present role, whatever. Like, for me, it's not about the unconventional family dynamic. For me, it's the fact that he abandoned that dynamic. Because at the end of the day, these children do not understand the complexities of, like, you know, all they understand is that they had this man in their life for a certain amount of time and then he was gone. That's what it's about for me. I do not care. If the story was just, oh, he was a sperm donor and he's actually actively more involved in their lives than he originally let on, would it be a little bit annoying that he lied on TV? Maybe. For me, it's not even about that. It's the fact that he, like, abandoned the children. I don't like that. I'm sorry. I think abandoning children is wrong. But I do really like Taylor and the guy's name who I can't remember. Garrett. Oh, I really like Taylor and Garrett. I'm wishing them the best. It was a good season of TV. I liked the characters. I liked the drama. Another note I had, which I have said this, not bringing Brittany and Leo to Mexico was stupid, because a big point of conflict, which makes interesting TV in past seasons, is when people see people they didn't choose for the first time. And we would have gotten that with Leo and Brittany because Leo was in like a love triangle. It would have been a bit more interesting. Anyways, that's really my only thoughts. I also watched The Ultimatum season 3, and it was good. It was the first season. Like, the thing is, the queer like Ultimatum is just significantly better, but it was good. It was good. It kept me hooked. I tried to watch season 2 of The Ultimatum, and I have to be honest, I checked out after like the second episode. This season, it kept me hooked. I watched all of it and I was interested. Did I retain like a single thing about any of the people? No. Would I, like, am I gonna watch the next season? Maybe. I'll give it a chance. This season definitely kept me more hooked than the other one. I think The Ultimatum is just such a like fucked up show. And also, it's just like, I don't know. I want people, like, I think part of what made The Queer Ultimatum so good is that like they were messy. This is like the one annoying thing, which it makes good TV, so I guess it's not that annoying, but it's like they're like broken up and they're supposed to be in these trial marriages, but none of them are actually in trial marriages because they in their mind are not single. Like, none of them are like pursuing this other person that they're supposed to pretend to be married to. They're not like at all acting like they are in a couple because they are still presently in their mind, like, committed to somebody else who they came into the show with. So it's like, I don't know. It's crazy. It's a crazy thing to sign up for. I also rewatched How I Met Your Mother this year, and I did already talk about this on a podcast episode somewhat recently, and I don't think I have many more thoughts. How I Met Your Mother, like, really doesn't hold up for me in terms of humor. I think the storytelling and the arc, I think there are a lot of really wonderful aspects about the writing of How I Met Your Mother in that regard. The characters are really interesting, despite the ways it's, like, the ending really was poorly executed. I have a lot of issues with How I Met Your Mother, but it is a very, like, nostalgic show for me. I think if I didn't have any, like, emotional connection to How I Met Your Mother, like, I'd never watched it when I was younger and it meant nothing to me, I do not think I would get through it in rewatching it. But it was just something that I could like have passively that I was consuming that I'd already seen that wasn't going to stress me out or really upset me too much any one way or the other. Then the next show that I talked about on the podcast and watched was Bachelor Pad. Season 1 was great. I was hooked instantly. And season 2 is even better. If you are a fan of the Bachelor franchise and you've never seen Bachelor Pad because, like me, it was before your time, like you started watching after and you don't know any of these people, honestly, I really recommend it, even if you don't know the people. You don't need to watch season one to watch season two. And if you can only really watch one season, I think season two is the better one. I haven't watched season three yet, so I don't know how that shakes out, but season two is phenomenal. And I really think they should bring Bachelor Pad back. I'm like, renew Bachelor Pad. That is like my, I would die if they brought Bachelor Pad back. Like, I think it would be so good. It would be so good in this day and age, because so many people go on the show now in a competitive mindset. Back in the day, these contestants weren't trying to be influencers. They went on maybe pursuing love and maybe to be like reality stars in that sense, but they weren't going on specifically to build an Instagram platform, like to compete in that way. People are a lot more calculated going into The Bachelor now. I think, like, as much as I hate the man, Devin, imagine Devin on Bachelor Pad. Like, they need to bring the show back. Except actually, don't bring Devin back. Don't bring Devin back. But anyways. And then also, The Sex Life of College Girls, I've been watching, I've been loving. I really like the character. And obviously, I will get into, like, my more detailed thought. I'm kind of breezing past Bachelor Pad and Sex Life of College Girls, because Bachelor Pad Season 2, I'm going to, like, conclude my thoughts in that separate episode, and Sex Lives of College Girls, I am planning to do like a deep dive when the whole season's over. But I'm really liking the season. I was obviously sad to hear that Renee's character was leaving, but I think honestly, her leaving, as upsetting as I like her character, I didn't want her to leave. If that's what she wants to do for her career, like I saw people. And I know that they were probably, like, saying it jokingly, but about how, like, people would, like, I don't know what the tweet was, but it bothered me because it was something about how, like, Renee should have been, like, clocked in finishing out her contract, like, instead of trying to get out of it for her career, like, music career. I disagree. I don't want people to do work that isn't fulfilling them creatively. I think the way they concluded Layden's arc felt very, like, respectful and, like, real to her character. I think they wrapped it up nicely. I think if that's what she wants to do, that's great. And I think the show's been doing, like, just fine without her. Like, obviously, there's a gap there. But it's still, like, just as funny. The characters are just, like, the show hasn't gotten worse at all without Renee being there. And I am really, like, I'm really loving this season so far, and I'm excited to talk about it in more depth. In terms of shows that I did not talk about on the podcast at all, but I watched High Potential. I don't know what that airs on. I watched it on Hulu, but I don't know where it's on originally. And I really like that. My sister recommended it to me, and I watched all of that. I really like that. I recently started rewatching Switched at Birth because... And I talked about this when I talked about Desperate Housewives, like, months and months ago. Was that this year? Did I watch Desperate Housewives this year? I don't know. I don't think so. I think that was 2023. Maybe I finished Desperate Housewives in 2024. Anyways, I started watching Desperate Housewives because I kept getting clips of it on my TikTok For You page. And the same thing happened to me with Switched at Birth. I mean, I have seen Switched at Birth, but I rewatched it. And I rewatched it actually somewhat recently. Like, I'm 99% sure that when I was living with my parents post-grad, I would watch TV with them. Like, that was, like, we had a few shows that we would watch. And with me and my mom, at first, it was Gilmore Girls because I really wanted her, like, it's my favorite show. So we watched Gilmore Girls. And then when we finished that, I think we started Switched at Birth. So I've rewatched it, like, somewhat recently. That was 2022. So I watched it somewhat recently, but not in, like, a few years. And I actually didn't finish my rewatch when I watched it with my mom because I think I got a job and was, like, then moving before we finished watching it. I don't know if she finished watching it on her own, but I didn't finish my rewatch, but I did rewatch it somewhat recently. But I kept getting clips and I was feeling all nostalgic. So I started rewatching it and I love it. Great show. Do I have critiques of it? Of course. Who am I? Not somebody with critiques. I will say, Switched at Birth, watching it, like, as a young person, I think was so impactful for me because I've never met a deaf person. I have met somebody who's hard of hearing, but I've never met, like, somebody who, like, was born deaf, grew up in that culture, like, ASL is their first language. Like, I had no introduction to that community. And I learned a lot through Switched at Birth. I really always wanted to learn sign language because of the show. And I even actually, like, funny enough, when I was living with my parents post-grad, I had a lot of time, which is when I started this podcast. And I also, along with starting the podcast, I was watching, there's like a ASL class online that you watch the videos and then like you take quizzes, and I was like grading myself and I was doing the lessons. It wasn't like I was enrolled in a class, but I was like doing the lessons, and I got up to lesson like 60, I think, out of 75 or something. Like, I got pretty far in, and I do think that I retained a good amount of the vocabulary. I do not think that I really could form like a sentence, but I think if I ever met a deaf person, I could like maybe introduce myself, say hello, which is nice. I do want to learn ASL eventually. I think it's a beautiful language, but yeah, I don't know. I've really enjoyed Switched at Birth, like rewatching it. It's such a comfort show for me, like nostalgic. And I also think they talk about a lot of things. They cover a lot of things with like nuance and different perspectives and like in a way that I find really compelling and I think is really good. Anyways, moving on. Towards the end of the year, honestly, I just rewatched a lot of shows. So I don't have like much to say about like any new shows towards the end of the year because it was a lot of rewatching. Oh, I did watch No Good Deed on Netflix. I really liked that. It had Lisa Kudrow and Ray Romano. Really good show, great cast. And like the structure was really compelling because it's about this couple who's selling their house. And there's like some implication from the beginning that something bad happened at the house. Their son is dead, and it follows like them. And like eventually we find out what happened to their son. And also all the people interested in buying the house. It really interesting. I enjoyed it. I do recommend it. Super easy watch too. Like it's on Netflix. It's not like too heavy, but it's also not like just fluff. Like it's a good balance. I really enjoyed it. Great cast. Like a great cast. I also really loved Challengers. It's not a show, it's a movie, but I loved Challengers so much. I had to mention that. Okay, so I wanted to do superlatives, but I have to be honest, I don't know. Okay, outstanding like comedy series. Like what was my favorite comedy series? I watched so much reality TV that it's hard, but I think if I had to do like an outstanding comedy series, I don't know, maybe it would be tied with like Sex Lives of College Girls and like Shameless, I think, because those are both kind of funny. The lead actor slash actress, like who do I think had the best performance, like that moved me the most in any of the shows I watched? This is so hard. I think 9-1-1, obviously this didn't air this. I watched 9-1-1 from the beginning and I don't remember what season this is, but Jennifer Love Hewitt's performance with her character Maddie's like abusive husband in that whole arc was so powerful, and that really sticks out to me as something that I watched for the first time this year and like really felt something. I also, Jeremy Allen White's performance as Lip throughout like everything he went through in college, that was really emotional for me. So I think those are probably the people, like the performances that stick out to me. Most of the shows I watched were like reality TV, so I'm like, this doesn't really hold up. But my favorite show that I watched this year, I think, of like new shows, because I'm not going to do, yeah, of new shows, I do think, I don't know, maybe it's recency bias, but I love The Sex Lives of College Girls. I do not think we have enough shows that talk about college, and I think it does so in a good, compelling way. I like the characters. It's not perfect, but I really do just really like the show. I liked Pretty Little Liars Summer School. It's just like the ending was so unsatisfying to me, and then the fact that like that's where it ends off forever because we're not getting a season 3 is a little unfortunate. But I don't know, best reality show that I watched this year, I think probably The Traitors season 2, that or Joey season of The Bachelor, I think have to be, I guess Big Brother, but Big Brother probably wins. Most like rewatchability potential of shows that I watched for the first time, probably 9-1-1, because I feel like I don't know. Like, I rewatch shows like Criminal Minds and stuff like that. I forgot to mention that. I rewatched Criminal Minds a little bit at some point. I watched Law & Order SVU. Those are all shows that I forgot. Sometimes I watch Shark Tank. I'm like, I watch shows I just forgot to mention. But I think probably in terms of, like, a show that I watched for the first time this season, this year, that has the most, like, rewatchability potential, I think probably maybe High Potential, especially because, like, there's a big mystery of, like, what happened to her ex. I feel like if, I don't know, because right now it's on hiatus, I think. Like, I think, you know, like, shows release, like, a few episodes and then they take a break and then they're back in January. I don't know. It's been a few weeks. Maybe there's been another episode. But, like, I do think that one will have rewatchability. I think No Good Deed might have some rewatch potential because maybe I'll want to pick up on clues. But I don't know, because that one's so short that I don't know if I'd want to rewatch it. And High Potential, again, it hasn't, like, I guess it depends how long it goes. But I don't know. Big Brother 26, I do think I will rewatch in a few years all the way through. I think it's a very different experience watching a season of Big Brother, like binging a season of Big Brother and watching it in real time while you're also watching feeds. Like, those are completely different experiences. So I'm excited to, like, revisit Big Brother 26 when it's not, like, actively in the summer. And you know what I mean? Like, I'm excited for it then. But anyways, I think those are, like, the main thoughts I had about shows I watched. Might have missed something, but if I did, it just wasn't that memorable to me. I obviously rewatched Yellow Jackets a lot, but I mean, I have so much to talk about when that comes back. So I will talk about Yellow Jackets in a month, which is crazy. Well, a little bit more than a month. But thank you so much for tuning in. This episode, again, will be out after the one that I'm recording later. But thank you so much. There will be a new episode, my first Traitors coverage, which will also be episode 100 of the Emmy Awards, which is crazy. This is episode 99. Thank you so much for tuning in. It means a lot. I hope you have a happy new year. Thanks so much if you tuned in at all throughout 2024. I hope. And if you didn't, I hope you tune in for 2025. It means a lot. Thank you so much. I hope you have a great week and you'll hear from me somewhat soon. I have no idea when, because again, I'm recording these out of order. Anyways. Bye.